Hello, Books and Hikes Book Club members. Welcome to Books and Hikes Bites, a monthly book report where Barb, Dennis, and I share our opinions of the book we're currently featuring. If you're new to the podcast, B&H is an interactive book club that is held the last Sunday of every month at Placerita Canyon Nature Center. Barb, Dennis, and I are docent naturalists at PCNC and facilitators for Books and Hikes. For those of you who are new to the B&H family, Books and Hikes is an interactive book club for individuals who are interested in reading books about nature, sustainability, and how humans can most effectively integrate into ecosystems. We try to tie in relevant sections of each book to the wildlife, plants, and nature encountered at PCNC. In other words, we encourage members to physically interact with the book via guided hikes. This month's book is The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America. The Big Burn won the Washington State Book Award in History and Biography and the 2010 Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association Award. There's also an accompanying free 52-minute mini-doc available on the PBS platform. The author is Timothy Egan. I'd like to start with a brief summary of the book before we move to our tight 10, a 10-minute roundtable where Barb, Dennis, and I share our opinions of The Big Burn. In addition to providing a summary of the book's content, I also like to comment on structure, format, and, on occasion, the origin story of the text we're covering. Well, let's get started. The Big Burn refers to the Wallace, Idaho fire of 1910, the biggest wildfire in North American history. This fire destroyed more than 300 million acres across northern Idaho and western Montana in approximately 36 hours. 86 people were killed, the majority of whom were firefighters. The Wallace fire is addressed in part two of the book entitled What They Lost, followed by part three, What They Saved, the last chapter of the book and a mere 26 pages. At this point in the podcast, I'd like to spend some time on part one. The first 100 pages of the book are divided into five chapters and entitled Part 1, In on the Creation. This section discusses Teddy Roosevelt's relentless struggle with the help of Gifford Pinchot to create our National Forest Service. Both men strongly believe that forests throughout America must be preserved by the federal government for the people. Before big timber and big railroad, this is similar to corrupt big pharma in present day, before big timber and big railroad destroy everything. The two men hatch this plan when T.R. is the governor of New York, and both are responsible for coining the word conservation. A few points of interest about Roosevelt and Pinchot. Teddy says the word bully all the time, as in, that was bully, and frequently asks male visitors to wrestle and box with him upon their arrival to the governor's mansion and later the White House. T.R. also wrote around 35 books in his lifetime. Gifford was born into a wealthy family, with the bulk of his family's earnings coming from timber proceeds, and that was obtained from the destruction of millions of acres of forest. This fun fact is barely mentioned, however. Pinchot loves the great outdoors, and after attending Yale, he goes to France to study at
L'École Nationale Forestière.
We know it as the National Forestry School. So after going to Paris, France, he returns to America, calls himself a forester, and hangs out a shingle because it appears that Pinchot is the only forester in America at this time, having created the job title solely for himself. As an aside, John Muir was one of his best friends. While all of this is going on, and remember, we're just looking at part one of the book thus far, while all of this is going on, Teddy Roosevelt is advancing politically, and he becomes President McKinley's VP in 1901. Prior to this, McKinley, during his first term in office, 1897 to 1900, for those who care, had already appointed Pinchot to chief forester, quote, head of a tiny division with no power, end quote. That's from the book. And McKinley appointed him largely due to Pinchot's family connections. We know what that means, money. Because Pinchot comes from a wealthy family. McKinley wins a second term, but then he's assassinated 6 months later and succeeded by Teddy Roosevelt, the Veep. And TR asked Pinchot, his old friend, hey, can you stay on as chief forester, speechwriter, wrestling partner, boxing, sparring partner, etc.? And the rest, as they say, is history. Pinchot spends the next 20 years establishing the National Forestry Service and talking to the spirit of his dead 28-year-old girlfriend Laura on an almost daily basis. Pinchot notes in his diaries that while Laura's spirit is stuck at the age of 28 when she died, he is continuing to age, so he tries to keep in shape as best he can for Laura, his much younger girlfriend, who happens to be dead. Laura died in 1894, but still communes with Pinchot regularly. However, by around 1910, she stops coming around, rarely showing herself. Maybe she thinks Pinchot is too old for her now? Pinchot gives up on their relationship, and in 1914, he marries Cornelia Bryce when he is 49 years old. Cornelia is just 33 years old. The rest of the book, as mentioned at the top of the hour, the rest of the book is about the Wallace fire and the devastation that ensued, the bulk of which is contained in part two. So what did I think of the Big Burns? I read the book, and when I turned that final page, I thought, thank God for Teddy Roosevelt and Gordon Pinchot. If it wasn't for them, big timber and big railroad would have destroyed everything. No forest would have remained. Please understand that my commentary is in no way an attempt to minimize the plight of the Native Americans, and I have great sympathy for the treatment they've endured as a result of our American government over 200 plus years. I feel I must say that disclaimer. However, were it not for Roosevelt, Pinchot, and his dead girlfriend Laura, the majority of our nation's forests would have disappeared, and nobody would have had access to the land because the forest wouldn't exist. A few non sequitur comments. I thought it was incredible how Pinchot and friends surveyed thousands of acres of forest and were seemingly never lost. They always returned. In this day and age, so many people are reported missing or sadly die after embarking on a day hike without enough water, or simply because they are unable to find their way back to the start of the trail. But Pinchot, Muir, Koch, Polanski, Roosevelt, they were out for months at a time with no Alt Trails app. And Koch's wife was right beside him. He considered her a partner, or so the book says. That's impressive. My second non sequitur comment. Who knew that Taft was such an incompetent, spineless president? Shocking. I read this book and an existential shift in my worldview occurred regarding land acquisition, Teddy Roosevelt, and our National Forest Service. As always, I have a few minor criticisms. This book is well sourced with 19 single-spaced pages of footnotes. And yet, there is almost nothing in the Big Burn about what I just mentioned, i.e. Native American ownership and land entitlement. Where is it? The Native Americans deserve an honorable mention in part one, and this would be best achieved by creating a sixth chapter under this section. Recall that there are only five chapters right now. My second criticism is that Egan's voice is somewhat antiquated at times, and sections of the book are written in a stilted way. Before I checked the copyright date, 2009, I assumed the book was written in the 90s. But as I was reading through the text, it occurred to me Egan probably spent several years immersed in research from the early 1900s, and maybe subconsciously this seeped into the text and influenced his writing style. I think a different editor could have created more seamless transitions. I'm not going to bother you with examples. I've already talked too much. I'm going too deep as usual. But you know, you know. If you felt that vibe coming through, then you know what I'm talking about. Okay. And finally, my last criticism, the font size of the text. This is an extremely superficial criticism, but I feel it bears mentioning. If you're one of our regular members, then you know that as a B&H facilitator, I always read the physical book, the text, and by text I mean print copy, is extremely dense. What do I mean by that? In general, I read about a page a minute, which means I read about 60 pages an hour. Big Burn is written in a single-spaced size 8 font, which reduced my monthly page count immensely. I found that after an hour of reading, I may have only read 30 to 40 pages of Big Burn instead of my standard 60 pages. This affected my monthly page count and books read goal for July. I like to read our feature book a month prior, and this is ultimately going to cut into my 2024 target, and the whole world's going to end now, okay? Is my rigidity the book's fault? No. If anything, this is a reason to give Audible books another try because, as a general rule, I won't read a single-spaced, small-font book because it's too hard to finish. You know, psychologically, it's the equivalent to wading through a swamp or being stuck in quicksand. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But that heaviness disappears with an Audible book, so perhaps I should revisit this other medium. Okay, let's move to our tight 10 and see what Barb and Dennis have to say about The Big Burn.
So Theodore Roosevelt clearly had a huge role in taking something that didn't exist and was obviously controversial and putting it into the nation's view. He had people that supported that, very few, and then there were more people, it seemed, that was against it. There was obviously the extraction era was still well underway, and people felt it was okay to develop your riches by taking effectively free resources and selling them. And so he had big enemies to work against, some of those who were in Congress. So to me, the book was very both a good indication of what was and then a good indication of how we should consider how things might be today, in which we were, I mean, especially this natural era, PCNC is you know, we have an area that we're trying to preserve and conserve, and there are different pressures. Nobody's trying to extract things out of it any longer, but we also have ways that we can deal with things like threats of fire and things like that. So, I thought it was great. I'm obviously a TR aficionado, but people like Pinchot, who knew how to deal with the adversaries all over, and the Rangers themselves, the first Rangers who I feel did do heroic deeds to try to save people that would rather be drunk than be saved. And so it was a lot of work they did, and yeah, a lot of them didn't get any benefits from it or even recognition. So
Dennis, I wanted to ask you a question. One of the books that we discussed had to do with quest. I refer to it as the quest book, but I can't remember the actual title.
Happiness of Pursuit.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And so you had said that one of your quests was reading the biography or autobiography of every president. And I'm wondering, did you come across Teddy Roosevelt as the father of conservation from your quest reading all of these biographies?
Yeah, a little bit. My son is also, he's always an engineer. He enjoys history. And but he's an engineer because I told him he can never make any money in history. But so we both like
So you trashed his dream.
No, I added to it.
Okay.
And so he can afford his dream now. But the idea is that, yeah, I got stuck on TR for, I must have read, you know, 50,000 pages on TR. And so he's quite an interesting guy from a lot of different elements. And yes, the conservation part of it, from somebody who came from a more patrician background. But he, as a young man, was very interested in the outdoors, partially because he was weakly and did not want to go out and interact so much. And it was only after his father kind of told him, look, you know, it's up to you to try to develop your future. And if you want to overcome your weakly nature, then you've got to do it. And so he did. And
That's
so
true. He
I
did.
think the combination of him developing himself, contributed a lot to his spirit and passion for doing all sorts of things. And then the area that he had a little bit of introversion early age and made him be more recognize nature better, I think added to that thing. Here he had, now you have an energetic leader who appreciates nature and wanted to do something about it and had the wherewithal and personality to make it happen. So yes, as part of that journey, I keep on going back to that era and reading more books.
Barb, what do you have to say about
the book?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't know much about Teddy Roosevelt other than, I don't remember, carrying a big stick.
Speak softly and carry a big stick.
I didn't know the bully pulpit was called the bully pulpit because he says bully all the time.
Yeah.
That was a fun fact that I enjoyed.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed reading the history about him. And it was very, to me, it was very positive because I didn't know much about him. The beginning of the book was kind of, the history was kind of like, and the relationship with Pinchot and Teddy and John Muir was kind of hard to get through, but I understand it. And that's where Pinchot was the one, if I'm pronouncing his name right, the one that came up with tying in the ideas of conservation in with Teddy's administration. So I found a quote that he said, "The earth, I repeat, belongs to the right of all of its people and not to a minority, insignificant in numbers, but tremendous in wealth and power."
What page is that, Barb?
It's page 66. Okay. He took his idea to Roosevelt, and TR, as I expected, understood, accepted, and adopted it without the smallest hesitation. It was directly in line with everything he had been thinking and doing. It became the heart of his administration. And that's where it became TR's rallying cry. Mm-hmm. So I really like that part of it.
What did you think about Pinchot's emphasis and focus on his dead girlfriend, Laura?
That was weird. That was weird, but so it made it interesting.
We have a revolutionary figure in conservation who was communing with a dead spirit for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And he finally married, and he ended up marrying someone who was 15 years younger, approximately. Yeah. What say you on that?
You know what? It was weird. And
like, there's, what can we say? Like, it was weird.
It was just really weird.
And he wrote
weird
about it in his journal.
I know. And then, you know, people like the little GPs.
Little GPs, yeah.
They would go, "God, he's weird. He's out camping and sleeping off by himself." Well, it was because he was trying to get a visitation from his old girlfriend.
That's right, yeah.
Which, you know, made for good reading, but I just thought it was kind of weird.
What are we to think about this man?
He's weird. You know, I think he's entitled, had a lot of money, and could do whatever he wanted.
Okay.
So that's what he did. But I liked him. I mean, I think he used his his money that the family made by, you know, cutting and slashing forests and did some good with it.
He was asking a dead spirit for advice. And what do you think about that? Like, maybe she was advising him on how to move forward with forest conservation.
Oh, hold on a second.
I just think it was weird.
Think about it this way.
Come into the conversation.
And I haven't really done this until now, but here you got a guy that has a good imagination. And
but he believed it. He wasn't imagining her.
So he's thinking it when he turned of, you know, the earth and how it belongs to everybody, and you know, there, he obviously has some very deep and broad, meaningful visions of how things work together. And so to me, this thoughtfulness, I could imagine, extends out to that afterlife and whatever else he wants to believe. And so, yeah, do most people believe like that? No. Do I know?
That's because it's not a dead spirit that we're talking to.
But was he really approaching a dead spirit or his own psyche?
He actually says he was a dead spirit because he said she stayed at 28 for 20 years, and he was very concerned about his physical appearance and keeping up with the ghost because she stayed young and he was getting old. So he's communing with her and not himself.
All right, so I think this is beside the point.
I know. What does this have to do with the rest of the book?
Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with conservation except for the larger view.
He's the father of conservation, but he was communing and talking to a dead ghost.
Which, again, makes for a good story and good reading, but what does it have to do with conservation? I have no idea.
Yeah.
The other characters that I really liked were Pulaski.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was the one that really saved the men. He was like the real hero, and it really made me sad that he didn't in his lifetime, he did not get that recognition.
Right.
And it brought out also a lot of things about how people who are heroes, who give of themselves, they don't get compensated, they don't get the health care that they need, if they're injured, and, you know, and that I just think was really sad to me. Then the other person that I really liked was Pinky, because she was actually she was a homesteader, so she got her land for free, which was great, but she lived there by herself. Mm-hmm. She built the whole thing by herself, and then when she was asked to help by cooking for the firefighters, she did it, and she served them well, and she ended up surviving and living until she was in her 90s, so I really liked that, but the whole book I enjoyed.
What was your favorite part?
The fire.
Yeah.
And all the stories. Yeah. All the stories about the different people who came and helped and those that didn't. And I just liked it. And I liked finding out what happened to all the people who were involved.
What do both of you think about the town of Taft? Any thoughts on that? We're getting ready to conclude.
Well, my concluding thoughts would not be about Taft.
Okay.
My concluding thoughts would be back to the lessons learned.
What do you think about Taft, though?
It was a side story, and once again, they were able to find a place out in the wilderness, so to speak, that they couldn't be bothered by almost anybody. So anything went. And so, yeah.
So lawlessness.
Anything went. So, yeah. Imagine these young rangers are now supposed to be managing, administering this forest, of which these lawless towns are in, and they're trying to deal with it. Yeah, let them burn. But the bottom line is that, okay, how does that those provide lessons for today? And I think they do.
Okay.
And I think they've provided lessons that have been received over the years. I mean, as Barb says, you know, our first responders nowadays are much better taken care of, you know, and they get benefits and they get recognition, and so I think we've learned that lesson. I think we're still battling over how to deal with the threat. I mean, here you talk about 114 years ago, 1910. And in fact, it was exactly, you know, it was almost the anniversary is yesterday of the fire, I think. So,
which was my daughter's birthday. So I told her about that.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And so, and it was a million acre fire. And so I tend to try to balance out the overreactions of some of the folks now that thinks everything is more horrible today than it ever has been. They had a million acre fire that took over, you know, four states and two countries and things like that. And so it's like, all right, you know, we do see bad things, and we see bad things all the time. You just got to learn from them and move on.
Well, and it was hurricane winds,
yes,
that triggered it, and yes, all these other little fires that have popped up because of the thunderstorms or dry thunderstorms and stuff.
The documentary says there were 2,500 small fires that were going at any one point in time.
And the wind picked up, yes, and it just, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Same.
I just can't even imagine what it would have been like.
Yeah, think of the strength and just the grit of the people that just looked at and said, okay, we got to go do it. Either it was desperation at some point, like the town just didn't want a working job, wanted something to do. Or the Buffalo soldiers, who it was their job too, but they were assigned to go there, ordered to go there, and Pulaski or somebody like that he loved the outdoors, he loved that environment, and so he was doing what he needed to do to he felt help it live. So all different reasons for people to come and serve there that were all admirable. So I like the heroic part of the story.
Yeah, there were a lot of courageous people. Okay, a few concluding comments. I was reading this book, and I just note to the B&H members, I hiked the Hotshot Memorial in Prescott, Arizona, I think it was last month now, and there was 19 firemen who died when the fire changed direction suddenly and burned them. They died from smoke inhalation, actually, but it had new meaning for me after reading The Big Burn and then watching the documentary, knowing what these men went through.
The best thing about TR, though, and we ought to do this today, is that we ought to have congressmen that don't agree fight each other.
Wrestle. Yeah.
And wrestle. Yes, that's and whoever wins, whoever's winning, okay, that's it.
Let's not forget about that. Yeah, the wrestling, the constant wrestling and boxing.
And making him swim in the lake.
Yeah.
Wherever.
Strip down to being naked and jump in the river, by God.
And yeah, so swim. That was weird, too. Okay.
I thought that was awesome.
Okay. And on that note, this is the end of Books and Hikes Bites and our book, The Big Burn.